Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Bill Bowman, evangelist and product strategist at OpsView. So, always nice to get a bit of context, but a little bit on kind of your background. As you said, I suppose quite unique in a lot of ways, your background and a lot of the projects kind of, you know, that you've worked on in the past and what you're working on now. It's obviously, as you said, quite different. So, I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, Andy. So I started actually in processor development was my first technical job working at Intel on the Pentium Pro. I was writing debug scripts at the time. And one of the things that we were doing was executing a multitude of regression scripts. And a hot topic was, how can we automate this? And that was back in the early 1990s, right? And we're talking about automation, which is going to come full circle on our podcast here today. Moving on from that, I ended up in network product development. We developed the original specification for DMI, the desktop management interface, which is now kind of in every Ethernet or Wi-Fi Ethernet-based device today. So that was a cool project to work on early on. And then my career evolved a little more into the outbound facing stuff, post-sales support at IBM, working on their Intel-based servers at the time, the Netfinity line, which became the X series and the System X that people use today from Lenovo, that evolved into a pre-sales role, customer facing, talking about the benefits of why would you spend more money on what you think is an industry standard server? What are the innovations that IBM's bringing to this? And sometimes those innovations were worthwhile to customers, sometimes they weren't. So it wasn't a solution for everyone, but it has become something that's certainly changed how the industry looked at things. And NUMA technologies, non-uniform memory access, became something that became standard in the industry as opposed to just a unique offering from IBM. So some of it was just early visionary innovation from even large companies that sometimes we see these large companies, you and I were talking before the podcast about they lose that innovation, but some of these companies find it again. And it was really exciting to be part of that transition and moving into the early days of virtualization on x86 and Intel and AMD based servers. I was one of the early people doing large virtualized environments on VMware. And then also with Hyper-V and Xen and KVM, and that kind of led me into an evangelist role at IBM, as well as feeding back into product marketing and product management and helping design what those products were going to look like, which brought me to Red Hat, which was really exciting. Red Hat was like, what's this cloud thing? They were getting into it. everyone knows Red Hat for Linux. And now I think Red Hat, a lot of people know him for cloud and a lot of people know him for middleware. But at the time, it was Red Hat Enterprise Linux. That's what people knew them for. So we built out a whole new team for supporting the public cloud, did the business development work, the technical work. It was interesting, bringing a technology that's designed to really run in one place by one company. And how do you get that out there and make it a shared platform, right? Like when you have an Amazon AMI, everyone's going to use the same one. They can create their own ones, but they're going to run off your base image. How do you make that base image something that everyone finds palatable? It's one of the reasons that Amazon brought out their Linux, was a lower cost and something that worked really well in an Amazon cloud environment. And another innovative time, another opportunity to work on innovation. Doing global programs with software-defined storage at Red Hat was just awesome. software-defined networking was taken off. So there's all these points in time that we see where these new things have come along, and they've all led us to where we are today. I spent some time at Canonical, moving into marketing there, and doing a lot of premium content and writing educational pieces on how do these things work, like the CIO's guide to NFV and SDN and VNFs, so that software-defined networking stuff. Like, how does it apply to a business person, right? How does it apply to the mid-level manager who's trying to decide, do we stick with our traditional infrastructure or do we go somewhere else?
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. And some of the things that, you know, how you're kind of transitioning to the marketing role from a more technical role, something that's been really an interesting thing to observe in the evolution of technology and the role that people have within technology. Obviously now it's the product. You know, 20 years ago it wasn't the product. It was a sort of backroom people in the basement, right? That's kind of what we associated with people in technical roles. Now it's very much the product, the forefront of the business, very much drives, you know, the business commercially. And with that, the evolution of the technical person has shifted quite dramatically to a point where they're now expected to fundamentally do their job technically, but are also supposed to know from a business perspective, have that understanding of business outcomes and, you know, what the business is striving towards. And clearly you've kind of almost kind of drawn that kind of evolution from technical person to now, you know, kind of in that marketing type of role where obviously the business outcomes are at the forefront of what you're focused on now. We seem to expect so much more of technical people now than we used to, and obviously mainly around on the business end. And we even see it within the technology itself, the kind of collaboration. You know, a great example is like DevOps. You know, now that's kind of hybriding two disciplines together. And obviously, I think that just comes with technology and the efficiencies that it allows us to utilize. But you know, for a technical person now, it does feel as there's so much more demanded of them. And obviously, you seem like, you know, a pretty unique individual who's been able to kind of transition, you know, relatively seamlessly into, you know, the kind of the marketing role as well as from a technical position. But I think that's still quite a unique thing that you've managed to do. And I think probably something that a lot of people who are technical first actually struggle to transition into. I'd love to get your kind of thoughts and take on that.
Yeah, it can be difficult. It depends on the individual. I think you make a great point about the expectations. With those expectations, you end up with a lot of responsibility as a technical person or maybe a technical business owner. But with that also comes a lot of opportunity. So if you are in a technical job or you're working in a technical track and you have inclinations toward other things, maybe you really like the sales side of things. Maybe you really like dealing with customers and demonstrating the technical benefits and values of your product, but also just the sales cycle itself. You can go there. If you really enjoy writing about the benefits of the technology you work with and doing the blogging, doing webinars, getting out, speaking at conferences, you can go there, right? There's almost no place from these technology positions that you can't go. If you have the inclination and you make it clear to the people with whom you work, the business owners, that you want to do that, most of the time, more often than not, they're gladly going to work with you to get there. So I think some of it might be just some of the technical people are a little, maybe a little shy to speak up and say, I want to do these other things. But a lot of times, just demonstrate it. You just start doing what it is you want to do. Start submitting papers to conferences. Start writing those blogs. Start volunteering to assist as the pre-sales engineer on a call or something like that. And you've opened up a whole new avenue for yourself. And largely, that's how I got to where I am today, going through an extremely technical role from, you know, low-level programming to managing a test team to doing on-site support, pre-sales, sales. I did global programs, business development. And now, where I am today, it's really not just a marketing role. And we'll get into the company I'm at now, but it's not just marketing. I work with product development, the product manager on where we're going to take the product. I mentor some of the pre-sales SEs and do exactly what I'm saying you would hope some of the senior guys do is give them the opportunity to step up and have their voice heard. So it is a unique track. I don't think I'm the only person who's ever transitioned that way, but I think a lot more people can. And I, everywhere I generally have worked in the last several years, I've always espoused the opportunity to both be a mentor, be a mentee, and voice what you want to do and have more fun. It's all about having fun at what you're doing. Some people want to be just do programming for life, but some people are going to get burned out. And the last thing you want to do is get burned out when you've got someone who really knows the company and the product and they just want to try something else and they have an acumen for it and they can demonstrate that. You know, I think that more companies than you might think would be open to it. They just haven't really thought about it yet.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say, you know, writing about it. I think that's, I'm assuming that's kind of how almost you got your start, was just you were really motivated and compelled to kind of write what you'd learned from, you know, I suppose a thought leadership standpoint on the technology, and that kind of just evolved into, you know, I suppose where, as you said, where you are today. You know, I suppose as well, probably something, a variable we're not necessarily mentioning is that, you know, the role of marketing and the role of, I suppose, you know, promotional side of things for technology, it is subject matter experts as much as anything. People want to, you know, understand product now. It's not about kind of, you know, especially in the kind of in a B2B environment as well. It's not necessarily about the kind of the glamour, the, you know, the quick advertising. People want substance behind, you know, what your product offering is. So you have to have that technical understanding in the first place to be able to, you know, actually market the product. So it goes more hand in hand than, you know, I suppose we probably have necessarily given, you know, consideration for.
Yeah, and some of us have thought about that. We're actually looking at OpsView right now for a hands-on technical marketing manager for doing content. And you're right, I started writing blogs and I started to submit papers, you know, and there's a call for paper at a conference that I thought I could give an interesting talk at. I would submit, and you know, the company said, hey, if you get accepted, we'll send you. You know, it's good for the company, it's good for you, and I started to get accepted, and people liked what they heard. You know, they were interested in the thought leadership or even just the explanation. Some of them were very technical presentations on how does some brand new technology like SRIOV or DMA remapping work. So I maintained those technical roots while I was out there building my chops or learning how to speak. So it's something you can do hand in hand and work on both of those things at the same time. But I think you see that companies like Red Hat and other progressive companies, you'll see even Amazon and Rackspace, they're going to have positions like technical marketing managers, and they've had them for a long time because they've recognized that need. They need those people who have those technical skills, but also want to exercise their creative side, their writing side, you know, exercise their voice, you know. So I think you're right about that. Some of these companies have been doing it for a while, and, you know, people listening to this podcast will probably start thinking about, could I do that? Or if I'm working at one of those companies, maybe we should look at a person like that and not have these strict separations between these roles of this person's technical and this person understands go-to-market. Well, you know, let's cross-train them a little bit.
I think so. And I think it's, honestly, I think that it's kind of more of a scary proposition for the, I suppose, just the marketing professionals, if you like. You know, and maybe people who've been in companies as those marketing professionals for longer, they, from my experience, are probably a little bit more resilient to seeing that kind of change on a wider scale. Because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you have a bunch of kind of technical people who now who are kind of able to do, you know, your role as such. I think that that's inevitably going to happen. And like we said, like as I mentioned earlier, with, you know, even in technology, that happens all the time. you know, things like automation and such, they do extinct certain practices and such. And that's just the inevitability of change. So you have to, I suppose we have to be accepting of that.
Yeah, but usually what we see is we think something went extinct and really has just changed into something else. I think that the marketing role is a really good example. If you are a technical person and you're moving into work with a marketing team, one of the things you can do to test yourself is how effective are you at bringing your marketing team up to speed on some of those technical concepts? Because if you can't get them on board and can't explain it to them, then how effective are you going to be when you start talking to business owners as opposed to just technical people when you start to have your voice heard externally? And the inverse of that then is the marketing people really do know a lot of things that the technical person's going to need to spend some time on. They didn't go to school for 4 or 6 years getting marketing degrees and you know, have all the fun we think they had. These people understand campaigns. They understand go-to-market strategies. I have learned tremendous amounts from the people I've worked with in marketing, both work with and work for, in just a short couple of years being in it. And even just yesterday at lunch, one of my colleagues was explaining the details of how she organizes her campaigns, all the different aspects of it, all the moving parts. And I was looking at her list of to-dos, and I was like, wow, I had no idea. You know, just the complexity of a marketing campaign and the integration with the back-end systems. And bear in mind, these people aren't all non-technical. These people are working on Marketo. They're working on Drupal in the back-end, editing the code, putting up unique landing pages, you know, tracking the clicks, that sort of thing. They're doing this work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I probably I can second that as a marketing professional, I suppose. Have an element of technical talent as well. I just think it's, I think that it's, evolution is right. I think what you've said, it's not extinction. And I think there is a distinction, between the two, isn't there? And I think that's what, people tend to get hot and flustered about when they think about AI or any change in general. It's, being we kind of said this on another podcast that I had actually earlier today, and it was, you know, being comfortable with being uncomfortable, right?
Exactly. Yep. And that's a great way to look at it.
And that's how people have to approach things. The people who aren't going to be open and accepting to that change, then that's your decision to be that way, right? No one's going to force you out. I think you typically, you know, you'll force yourself out by not being willing to get up and move.
Yeah. And I think that's what we see when we're looking at some of how a modern, for example, you know, the software company is operating, especially with, you mentioned DevOps earlier. And that's a big one for us here at OpsView. We're actually, so OpsView, where I am now, is a software, a system and application monitoring company. We basically enable DevOps to have visibility through monitoring automation. And when we talk about DevOps, you know, in that whole crossover thing of what is that, I think there's even some confusion as to what that is. Like it's not a person. It's a construct or a term to apply to a role type. You know, it's actually a developer operator or a development operations as opposed to a developer operator. Sorry, I got that one backwards. Is where it started out. It came from these automation pieces you were talking about that I mentioned from the very start. Like we want to have people do more than just their role. So once we started to build clouds and have self-service systems where a developer didn't have to go to the operations folks every time they wanted a development or test system, they could deploy it themselves. That developer now starts crossing over into operations. And then the vice versa, where the operations person who used to go to a developer to automate something, they started to learn the scripting and some of those development techniques and automate their own stuff because they're building these massively scalable automated systems and they couldn't possibly support 1,000 or 2,000 servers on their own without that level of automation and getting into that side of development. And that's where we came up with the whole DevOps thing. and where we are today. And it's really something that here at OpsView, we're using it, we're doing it, we're pursuing it, we're supporting it. You know, we have our own people that work in multiple types of DevOps roles. So it's not just a developer and it's not just an operator. One of our customer success engineers was on the phone with a customer just the other day, and there was a bug in a source script. So to resolve the issue, he pulled up the source script, edited it, fixed it, submitted a hot patch to the customer, and then resubmitted the script into our own CI/CD, continuous integration, continuous development process, so that our own development can review that fix and re-release it so that it's back in the process. And that's what we're talking about with this whole continuous integration and DevOps. And it's not just the developers or the traditional operators. We have an operator, you could say, a guy who was, you could call an operator, one of our crossover guys in the UK, who set up OpenStack, an internal OpenStack for our development team to use. So now this one person in a part-time position maintains hundreds of instances that are practically all maintained themselves, and all of our developers can get their test and dev off of that. It's at full capacity right now. This is the power of crossing these roles over. So getting uncomfortable and thinking these crossover roles are where we're going is a good thing. It's like you said, it's not bad to be uncomfortable in these roles.
I agree, mate. I agree. And I think it takes, as I think we were talking about that actually before the show, it takes collective behaviors, you know, and that environment and culture to get people on board with that kind of way of thinking. It's, you know, it's quite nice that it's even on a full circle from what we were talking about earlier. So, you know, maybe that responsibility relies on leadership, and then that stems in the education that they kind of give to the junior people, and then those behaviors kind of continue. We have to push as industries and as business, don't we? Otherwise, we stand still. You get overtaken, both on a macro scale, but you as individuals on a micro scale, you'll get overtaken also.
Yeah, the individual can, the product can. Remember, you were talking just earlier about it's not just about the products anymore. It's the innovation is also from the people. You come into a company that had some innovative products. You have to continue to innovate. I like that you said maybe it comes from the top down, because maybe it comes from the bottom up. The innovation could, or the new paradigm, the new roles we're talking about, it can very well start with one person who just says, I'm going to cross over, or I'm going to try this thing, or I'm going to propose this thing. And one other person gives it acceptance and credence, and the guys working on just racking servers might be the ones with the most innovative ideas in the company, and it boils up to the top. So the real responsibility of leadership, if they aren't bringing the ideas to the company, is at least to be open to them and to listen to these opportunities, because we've seen that, and we've seen how they turn into Googles and Facebooks and things like that that have changed how we view the world.
It's exactly. And as I said, maybe from the top down is because the innovation can come from the bottom up, but only if the top allow that environment to exist. So that's why I use that particular phrase, is because it can, and surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, you do get some of the great ideas from the fresh set of eyes, and we just have to be open as leaders to be listening to everyone be in an environment and create an environment that encourages people to feel comfortable in voicing their opinion, right or wrong. It's, we only get smarter by, learning, getting more perspectives and more thoughts on things.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And those that know me know I'm a huge fan of top-down leadership. I like to see the people at the top be open to the ideas and to be open to the feedback, even when they know, just maybe from a bigger business perspective and what they're trying to accomplish, that feedback may not be useful or relevant at the time. It, create that sort of open environment where the people feel comfortable sharing. And that's where you do get really strong and powerful top-down leadership that can really lead you in the right direction. I don't think we've ever seen one of these large companies, successful companies, or even small successful companies like our own get anywhere without that sort of directional leadership, you know, from the top, and have a strong leadership team, but also have them open to the new ideas or generating those new ideas. I mean, I work with some leaders who are generating the new ideas. So to your point, you know, it could come from anywhere. It's just about being open to it at all ends, because also you have to have the folks that are working for those leaders need to be open to it, or you could have a great leader with a lot of good ideas. If these folks aren't, you know, ready to make those changes, like you mentioned earlier, they may end up weeding themselves out of the system, and that might be good for them. It might be to their detriment. So it's all about your comfort level, but sometimes getting out of that comfort zone can be really good for you. And this isn't just software and technology companies. Like I'm sure you're seeing, you work in this world, you know, this is happening all over. This is in every company.
Yeah, there's no question. There's no question. I think there's some confusion at times, and I think it's because of the technology industry. But I kind of have been saying a little bit lately as well about, we seem to be synonymizing technology with innovation, but innovation is just it can be something as simple as a way of thinking, right? And I think that what a lot of people are kind of doing is getting confused with looking at technology to solve a people problem, and looking at technology to innovate and elevate, you know, their organization, when it's not always necessarily the case, right? It's can be as simple as innovating the way that we think from a people's perspective. And I think a lot of times it can be as simple as that. And, you know, even when I've spoken to numerous technical people on the podcast, they even say that, you know, technically we kind of get lost on occasion, kind of throw the latest and greatest to solve problems. And we make mistakes from a hiring perspective, because we kind of think that, you know, we hire these super technical people and they can come in and solve all our hopes and dreams. Well,
yeah.
You know, it's not. It's someone who understands the business side of things as much as, you know, the technical. But, you know, to make that kind of full circle, as innovation isn't just throwing something at a problem. It's really articulating the issue and coming up with a solution. How we can actually work towards it, and the problem will be solved from that point. I think we're in an environment where, because of what the access and the ease of kind of technology now, we think that throwing a new piece of tech at a problem is going to solve everything. And the reality is it isn't. You know, the innovation I think the biggest innovation that you can bring to a company is, you know, it is a way of thinking and a collectiveness about how we collaborate and come up with, you know, new ideas.
I think you're absolutely right, and I wouldn't diminish those ideas just because they're not technical. I wouldn't say they're simple. You know, I mean, it might sound simple once someone says it, but some of the greatest discoveries or revolutions in processes or new technologies or new ideas have come from what sound like a relatively simple idea once someone comes up with it. So you could be working as a project manager and come up with a whole new framework on how to do project management within a company, and it could save millions of dollars. And that has nothing to do with the technology, to your point. It just throwing technology at things doesn't always fix the issue, or doesn't always improve a process. So it's important to maintain your view on innovation throughout the enterprise and throughout different companies. So just because you're not a technology company doesn't mean that you can't or aren't innovating if you have those people thinking that way. And that's part of going after that sort of talent and looking at what is their depth and breadth of background. You're not always going to hire someone, I think, that has done exactly what you were doing before, if you're looking to take it to the next step or do something innovative or new. you're probably going to start looking for someone that came from a different background. And that's sort of what we talked about with these crossover roles. It could be entirely a crossover function to a completely different company.
I agree, mate. I agree. And having different perspectives is so key as well. And I think that that's something that, you know, as you know, you're a prime example of, is getting people into different roles who have completely different takes. Because as much as I think being internally at a company can create a bubble, also industries can create a bubble and kind of limit thinking. So it's always interesting to get people from different perspectives and collaborate with them. I tend to find that's where some of the best stuff comes from.
Yeah, and the collaboration is where I think we really see the genesis of new ideas. I think you can have really smart people sit in their own little space and come up with great ideas, but even those great ideas don't take off without the collaboration. And so getting that dynamic person that maybe you didn't expect to be in the room or be on that team and get their thoughts, especially if they're thinking along those lines and they're not sitting there thinking, I'm supposed to do what I've always done, but they're thinking, how can I help this new idea to be better? Or how can I get this new idea to market? Or how can I share my own new idea in this new space? So maybe you've always worked in a technology company and now you work at a paper company, and you can bring those, some of the practices or some of the things you learned for innovating technology to innovating, you know, bring cutting paper, making paper, different colors. How do you optimize the process, those sort of things, or go in the other direction? I mean, that's the exciting part that we see with getting people from different places these days. We have folks on our customer success team who have worked retail and been retail managers. You know, I worked at a gym for a little while just to get out of technology early on and see, was this really where I wanted to be? And gain some valuable customer service experience, you know? So it really is more than just where you are today. And there's nothing wrong with just staying where you are and doing that as well. I think we should emphasize that it's okay to have found your spot and be comfortable there, but it's also okay to feel around. And maybe you look around and you say, it's not for me, I'm gonna stay where I am, and that's great too. One of the things I like to do when I speak with people here at OpsView is I always ask, are you having fun? And some are, some aren't, and I say, what would make it fun or what would make it more fun? What do you wanna do? I mean, really fun. Like, if you're not having fun at your job, you know, it can be a real grind. So how do we make this place fun? And a lot of times it's not a big ask. It's really not a big ask. It might not even be something that costs money, or it's a very small amount of money. And showing that kind of goodwill from the company out to your employees, I think, is really critical.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't. Bill, I will kind of leave there. I'm conscious of time and I don't want to keep you for too long, but I really enjoyed the chat, mate. I'm sure we will do it again soon. And get stuck into some more interesting discussion. But thank you so much, Bill.
Andy, thanks for having me. It was absolutely great to be here.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. Is andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.